Welcome to Open Minds UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am with Martin, what you talking about, Willis.
I have had, people say that a lot. Do they? To me a lot. They do.
I haven't used it. And
I know you have. Remarkably. Wow.
It was suggested by a listener that I use it.
I've had someone leave a derogative comments on YouTubes after I do shows, like, what are you talking about? What you talking about, Willis? And then, go into the reason they're saying that.
That's really funny. So, I was thinking, maybe people don't even know what that is, because if you're younger, you might not.
That's right. So you better tell them what it is. This whole conversation means nothing.
Yeah. So what you talking about, Willis, was a catchphrase from a little person. I think that's the word you use for them, kind of like Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones. So it was Emmanuel Lewis, I think. Gary Coleman.
Gary Coleman. That's right. Wow.
I met him, actually. Wow. I hung out with him for a day. So anyway, it was what was the Different Strokes was a show, huh?
I think you got it.
Mm-hmm. So he would always say to his brother, and essentially it was these two black kids that from the city were adopted by this rich white guy had one daughter, a teenage daughter. And so that was a story on how they get along and everything. And so the youngest, who was actually an older man, but just looked like a little kid because he had that, thing where he was little, and so he would tell his brother, what you talking about, Willis?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was, that's funny. I started hearing it, during the show times, I was like, where is that coming from? And then I had to watch it to see what everybody was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the day, people were saying that to me all the time.
Yeah, back in the day when sayings like, where's the beef was big. And
that's right.
I can't remember
and
some of the other big ones.
There was J.J. Walker used to say.
Oh, yeah, dynamite.
Dynamite.
Yeah, he was funny. That was cool.
Yeah. So here we are
mm-hmm.
in the present once again.
Yeah, so let me talk about my guest. My guest is Lee Spiegel. Oh. And of course, we've had him quite a bit, but I love him because he's my buddy. And I'm lucky enough that, I don't think he does a whole lot of shows. So, and he's got a lot to share. And in particular, so later this week, in fact, in a couple days, I'm going to be flying out to Wyoming to Devil's Tower, where the mountain kind of thing made famous by the movie Close Encounters. And it's an event to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Close Encounters, the movie, which was also released in theaters in 4K, for the anniversary of the movie. And Steven Spielberg had this little part at the beginning. But anyway, this event, it's going to be a lot of fun, so I'll be there. I think Jan Harzan, a guy from who's the director of MUFON, will be there. Travis Walton will be there.
Mark D'Antonio.
Yeah, my buddy Mark D'Antonio. Debbie Ziegelmeyer and her brother Chuck Zukowski. They have a book called 42nd Parallel, something like that. They didn't write it, but it was written about them and maybe worked into a movie. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be doing two talks, one of them about strange alien cases. That talk, by the way, I'm going to modify it. I always change my talks before I do them every time. But you can see that talk on our video on demand for the UFO Congress. Go check that out. And the reason I say that is because there's a part on Spielberg on that, because I'm going to do another talk on Spielberg, the ufologist, and I'm actually going to take that part out, and I'm going to put all together all my Spielberg stuff, because I have a lot over the years. I have some stuff, you know, I think the first one to get the full resolution pictures from the Reagan Library of Steven Spielberg when he went to go see E.T. They had a special showing of E.T.
That's right. Yeah.
At the White House. And there was some of these pictures out, a couple of them before, but they were really low resolution. I don't even know where they came from. But I was able to work with the Reagan Library to get full resolution pictures.
And really?
I got those online, yeah. So, wow. And I've shared them with everybody. I gave them to Grant because Grant was big on that story. That's how I learned about it originally, Grant Cameron.
Yeah.
He does the presidential UFOs research. So so Lee is important, and Lee is related to this because he was hanging out with Hynek and with J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée during the time the movie was being made. And he has spoken recently to with Jacques Vallée about the movie. And he spoke up to Hynek, of course, back then about the movie when it came out. So he's got an interesting perspective on all of this. And so that's what we're going to be talking about because he has these direct relationships. J. Allen Hynek was an advisor to the movie. He was also... More than the reason why is he was an advisor to the Air Force regarding UFOs. He is a well-known astronomer back then. Jacques Vallée was his assistant, who also went on to be a well-known scientist and entrepreneur and venture capitalist and computer scientist. And he is the kind of the model. He was the influence for the main character of the French guy on Close Encounters.
Right.
Portrayed by famous director... Truffaut. What's his name? Do you remember?
No.
Lee and I talk about it, but I just wanted to say it again here because it's a lot of fun to say the word.
Well, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So while you're looking that up, I'll just say...
how do you know I'm looking it up?
I can just tell.
François Truffaut.
François.
Yeah.
Wow. Truffaut. Yeah.
That is fun to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
All the listeners, do it with me. François Truffaut.
Truffaut.
This is like French class. François Truffaut.
Truffaut. Yeah. Truffle. That's
Truffet.
What we do. We'll Americanize it.
No, if you Americanize it, the spelling is Truffaut.
Oh, Truffaut, of course.
Francis Truffaut.
Frank
this is my
Truffaut.
Good buddy, Frank Truffaut.
Well, I'm glad you have Leon. He is so much fun. I always enjoy talking to him, and I always love listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that great radio voice too.
He does, yeah. So we can catch up on what he's up to because he's doing some cool stuff right now. He's working with James Fox, but we'll talk more about that on the interview. But before that, let's talk about. And I should mention, I guess, to people, because what I'm talking about here is the UFO rendezvous. If you're not aware, it is in Hewlett, Wyoming, and it's September 14th to the 16th. So you can still just show up there at the base of Devil's Tower there, and we'll have a crazy experience. All that'll be going through my head, I'm sure, is the Close Encounters music. Do 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 do. We took my This is an interesting Close Encounters story, I think. A bit sad, but I think this happens to old people like myself. But I took my girlfriend's daughter, who's practically my stepdaughter. I mean, we're really close. We're good buddies. But I took her to Close Encounters. We all went together. And I was so excited for her to see the movie because it's one of my favorite movies. Probably the movie I've seen the most. And she didn't like it.
Oh.
And it really hurt our relationship because now I don't like her anymore.
No, you're never going to talk to her again.
No,
She's
dead
wouldn't.
To me.
Yeah.
No, I understand her perspective, though, because it is weird. 70s movies were weird.
Well, you know what, though? They just don't work today like they did.
Exactly.
Except for some classics. But I'll watch a movie that I loved years ago, and I'll watch it and I go, huh, why did I like that so much?
Yeah.
I think it's just the way we have just gone through you know, all the different changes and technology and all that. And it just, and then our levels of, have gone up so high, our expectations of what we're expecting to see.
Mm-hmm.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah, I could too. I mean, the special effects were good for the time.
Right.
But if you see them now, you know, it's like, ooh, what's up with that? So, yeah, I could see it. And I was a bit sad, but I could totally see it. So,
now, didn't Doug, what's his name?
Doug Trumbull, who works
yeah,
with
Doug
Mark
Trumbull
D'Antonio.
Did the special effects.
Yeah.
Right.
Mark works with him like on a regular basis. And
right, yeah.
Doug Trumbull is one of my favorite interviews ever.
There's that scene. Yes, he's amazing. There's that scene when the woman with her child is in the road and the UFO comes flying up the road.
Mm-hmm.
That is really well done.
It
even
is.
Today.
And you know what? One of the points I like to make, so here are some insights into my talk. But one of the points I like to make, I show the scene where this woman who is, her son got abducted and essentially the UFO comes down and the government meets him and the people come out of the craft, including the son. And she's taking pictures of the aliens in the spacecraft. And it's funny to me because it really hit me once that when I was watching it and when I was really into this stuff that if she sent me those pictures, let's say
would
this really happened, one, would I believe it? And even if I did, would I even be able to prove anything?
That's sad. It's a double-edged sword.
Isn't
You're
it?
Right, because I've heard the statement said that, you know, if the pictures are too good, then it's CGI or, you know, no one's going to believe it. And,
yeah.
You know, and then they also say, well, why is it blurry, you know, all that.
Yeah. So it just goes to show that pictures alone are not enough. You need a lot of supporting evidence to go with
That's
them
right.
because even in this situation where, you know, she really in the movie, of course, you know, saw these aliens and had this experience, no one would probably believe her.
That's right. That's right. It
Wild.
Would be. Yeah. I mean, I remember talking to Bruce Maccabee a couple of years ago and he said something along the lines with the photos like minor, it's the witness, you know, that's where you get your information.
Yeah.
You know?
A good point.
Yep.
Yeah, because, you know, he used to be the Mark D'Antonio. He used to be the head photo guy for MUFON. And I used to, when I was an investigator, send my stuff to him, and I would be frustrated. Because he'd be like, no, it could be this, and it could be that. And he's right, you know. And that's where I learned from his perspective. If I use the photo as a piece of data, I need to, with this photo, prove without a doubt that it is something abnormal. And with most pictures, even if it is something abnormal, but it's a light in the sky, you can't do that alone with the photo. And even if you couple it with a witness testimony, then it's interesting, but anecdotal information by itself doesn't add up to much either. So even with a photo case, you don't have much unless you have some peripheral stuff, like police being involved or radar or on a military base or something like that.
That's right. And I don't know, you know, I mean, if what you'd need to actually say this is definitely, you know, where is that line crossed when all of a sudden you can say, yes, everyone, we can all agree this is definitely something that doesn't belong here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder what you have to actually have science get behind it and say, wow, this is really from somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah,
how far do you have to go?
Very
touch
far.
It or actually a sample like taken off of it while it landed, like take a hubcap off or something?
Yeah, we don't even know yet.
Yeah, we don't know. Wow.
Yeah. So the news, why don't we move into the news? That's what you're here for. You're our news guy. So what do you got for us?
Well, all the news you can use when it comes to UFOs.
Ooh, nice. I like it.
That was an Alejandro Rojas imitation.
Oh, was it
know.
Me?
A little bit, yeah.
When I do my news guy voice?
Yeah.
Cool.
I tried. But
yeah,
anyway,
I
so I'll go with this. A UFO witness spots a large spherical object, quote unquote, during a hike in Portugal. Thank you for the sound effect. So this hiker in Portugal was taking some photos of an odd object recently. And this happened back in August 20th of this year. So he was on a hike, and these pictures are interesting. Here we go. We were just talking about pictures. There is, when you zoom in, it does look a little bit blurry. But he also says that, I think he says it takes off. The object actually took off, you know, because when you first look at it, to me, it looked like possibly like the Mylar balloon thing that we often, often gets mistaken for a UFO. But what did you think about this? It was kind of irregular shaped. It looks like it has some fins going on and stuff.
Yeah, he called it an irregular shape. He said it was essentially, you know, kind of making a steady path. And he at first thought it was a helicopter because he said it looked like a helicopter to him, or the size of a helicopter, which would be pretty large. And if you look at the picture, you know, it kind of substantiates that perspective. It looks pretty big in the photo. So I thought that was kind of weird. So, yeah, looking at the photo, because he took some great pictures with it, must have been a good camera, and it looks pretty large. So you zoom in, and I assumed it would just be a Mylar balloon, but it wasn't, obviously. It is an irregular shape, and he took two photos, and it looks the same in both photos, and it almost looks like a U-shape with a shiny center, but kind of
that
irregular U-shape with a shiny center. So I couldn't figure out what it was. In the story, I suggest that perhaps my only guess would be possibly a partially deflated Mylar balloon that's all kind of scrumpled up and crunched up, and maybe part of it is reflecting the sun that's floating through the sky. And a lot of people, a lot of the skeptics out there have jumped on that and said, yep, that's what it is. But
now, would something like that float, though, if it was deflated? You know how, I mean, it would have to be deflated quite a bit to be in that kind of weird shape.
That's a really good point, because that's what I wonder, because that's exactly what I wonder is, to look like it does, it would have to be very deflated. And in that case, would it float? I think one of the reasons they use Mylar for balloons is that it's very light. And
that's true.
I think alone it can float in the wind. But this seems to be aloft somewhat. So maybe it's really hard to say. So maybe it was way, way up there and then it deflated and it's coming down or something. I don't know. So it could possibly be mostly deflated balloon, but it is kind of an odd one. I think this one's harder to peg than they normally are.
Right. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, the other story, did you see that other one I wrote on Friday? This was Chris Rukowski. Have you had him on your show?
I have, yes.
Yeah, he's great. So, Canadian UFO researcher. He's also a science writer. That's what he is by profession. But he's an author. He's written several books, including one recently called When They Appeared, the Falcon Lake 1967 UFO story. And some of you who are into, you know, UFO history know this story, where there's this guy in Canada who saw this UFO and he got close to it. Well, it started to take off or something, and they had these vents on the side. And these vents burnt his chest. So Chris, who is very skeptical by nature, wrote this book with this man's son. So this guy's name was Stefan Michalik, and the guy's son is named Stan. And Stan co-wrote this book with Chris. So they covered this case in depth. The reason that's important is that Chris teaches English. He does these continuing education courses. And they asked him, hey, you know, what other ideas do you think would be interesting for a course? And he said, well, I wrote this book and about this local kind of a UFO thing. And they said, that'd be cool. Do a UFO course. So he's doing this UFO course, continuing education course through the St. James School Division, essentially. St. James Assiniboia. I'm not sure the second word. So it's really cool. So he gave me some quotes just talking about what they're going to be, what his perspective is on all of this. And even though he's a skeptic for the most part, he, you know, kind of like I, he really feels there's a genuine mystery to the whole UFO phenomena. And so he's doing this class. So that's kind of cool.
That is. You know, going back to this Canadian incident, did they consider that, I can't remember, did they consider that like radiation burns or was it heat burns? It was heat, wasn't it?
I don't know. It turned into rashes, and I think it was heat, but I don't remember that particular detail.
Yeah, it's very geometric. There was like a grid of dots. It first mm-hmm. started out like when he went into the hospital.
Yeah, we've got a picture of this grid of dots on his chest that you can see.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? You can find out more in the brand new book, When They Appeared.
By Chris Rutkowski. I always have a hard time with his last name.
Yeah, because it's got that, you would think it would be Rutkowski, but it's got this T, kind of this. So this
put a T in the middle of it, yeah.
Nomadic wandering T that has somehow inserted itself into part of his name. So it's like Rutkowski.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. So this is another good one. Can I talk about another one?
It's your show,
so
man.
So I can't
remember
if we talked about this on your show or my show, but essentially it was there's this nudist beach like in Wales or something like that where people have been seeing UFOs. And so that, of course, made some some headlines in the UK tabloids. But... And the place is called something Marianid. It's got a kind of a Welsh name. And if you know much about Welsh, they have these long, strange kind of groupings of letters and characters that are hard to pronounce. In fact, I think they've got one of the longest city names, like of any city names or something like that. But MUFON has decided UFOs, nudist beach, we're there. And so they actually have this sign, and it's posted in this new article at the Cambrian News. They have this sign posted outside of the beach that has a big MUFON symbol, and it says essentially, hey, if you see a UFO, be sure to let us know because of these stories of these UFOs being seen at the beach. So it's kind of funny. Is it really an investigation, or do you think it was maybe someone just wanted an excuse to go to visit the beach and put up these flyers?
That may be.
That's the mystery. That's a true mystery behind this story.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun. That's kind of a funny one.
Yeah. So is there any, do we have anything else? I noticed you have your daily headlines as always.
Yeah, a few headlines. There were some green flashes that were seen during the Mexico earthquake. That people thought were mysterious, and Forbes wrote a story on what that was. Otherwise, some other UFO stories, some UFO pictures, so people can go to the daily UFO headlines or just go to openminds.tv and see on the front page. They'll see the different UFO headlines there. So,
okay. I also have a kind of a funny story to tell you.
Got about a minute or so.
Okay, the recent CME, coronal mass ejection that we had.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. In the Russian news, they were saying that UFOs were coming down to Earth and zapping up and storing the energy out of it. That was on the news.
On Russian news?
Yes.
Huh.
Isn't that bizarre?
That is very, very, very bizarre. That's interesting.
Yeah, this show will be listened to by the NSA now. Mm-mm. With those keywords we've been talking about.
Thanks, Martin.
I know. Sorry.
That is it for the day. So thank you very much for joining us, Martin.
A pleasure.
People can hear more, not just hear him weekly on our show, but they can also hear you on Podcast UFO, your show. And in fact, because I'm going to be doing this Wyoming thing, I'm not sure I'm going to have a show next week. So they'll be able to listen to both of us on yours. But other than that, thank you. And right after this break, we'll talk to Lee Spiegel. Thank you. I am very happy to welcome back to the show Mr. Dr. Lee Spiegel.
When did I get my degree?
My number one customer, pizza delivery customer.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Those are inside jokes, because for some reason, whenever Lee calls me, he tries to order a pizza. And then we call each other doctor. Now, I remember the reason I did, because there was a UK paper, I think it was a tabloid, that called me Dr. Alejandro Rojas when it quoted me. But didn't you have something similar like that happen? That's why we call you doctor as well.
Well, I don't know if it was because of me, but I frequently like to call and say hello to our mutual friend, nuclear physicist Stan Friedman. And every time I call, like I did a couple of nights ago, and every time he answers the phone, and the way he answers the phone is he doesn't just pick it up and say, "This is Stan Friedman." No, he just picks up the phone and goes, "Hello." And so I always say, I'm sorry, is this Dr. Friedman? And then he goes, "No, I'm not a doctor." We always do that.
Yeah, because he gets mistaken to be a doctor because he is a scientist, sure, or has been often. But he's very quick to point out he has a master's degree, but he's not a PhD.
Yeah, but I don't remember. I think you were the person who first started calling me a doctor, and I always liked it. It just fits right.
It sounds great, Dr. Lee Spiegel, Dr. Spiegel. Yeah. So, we are actually here to talk UFOs, and in particular, we're going to talk about Close Encounters and Spielberg and some of that because of this great event that I, and unfortunately, you won't be there, but it's this weekend. It's September 14th, 15th, and 16th in Hewlett, Wyoming, which is right under the shadow of Devil's Tower, which, of course, was made famous. Well, it was already pretty famous as a national park, I guess, but even more famous by the Close Encounters movie. Have you ever been there?
No, I never have. I love the look of it. I think it was genius on whoever the set designer was who came up with that location to play out the final scenes of the movie Close Encounters. It's just a perfect thing, and it certainly lends itself to, oh, I don't know, mashed potatoes, as the character in the movie Roy Neary created at the supper table, a mashed potato version of Devil's Tower.
Now, in the movie, you know, the main character gets obsessed with the hill, and after he has this UFO encounter. But one of the things that, you know, it's probably the movie I've watched the most, and I did watch it re-released in 4K on the big screen recently, and that was super awesome. But I almost feel like the main character. I feel compelled, and for some reason, I cannot get away from the UFO topic. As hard as I may try at times, as frustrating as it may be, I mean, and I think you feel the same. Is that true?
You know, I don't think I've ever said this before publicly, but I will say this now. As much as I loved the movie, loved it when I saw it the first time and then several times after, there's a part of the movie that has always bothered me. Really deeply bothered me. And I still can't get around this. I guess it worked for the movie, for the main character played by Richard Dreyfuss, but geez, in this movie, the main character basically walks out on his wife and kids. And that always bothered me big time. And I've never been married. I don't have a wife. I don't have kids. But still, there was something, I don't know, something about that part of the movie that seemed almost taboo to me. Unless, of course, and you may know this better than me, have there been instances where people have become so obsessed with UFOs and the possibility that we're not alone, that they would take drastic steps like this and just walk away from their families. What do you think?
I don't know about that, but it is very, like, if that's happened or if there's people who would do it. But there is a parallel that I'll draw in a second. But first, okay. I want to talk about Spielberg, because it's very funny you say this, because Spielberg feels the same way. He said that he was even threatening, and the public said, don't do it, to change the movie, to re-release it like he did with E.T., and to change the end to where he doesn't go on the ship. And he said, because when I wrote that and made the film, I was single. And now that I'm a father and I'm married, there's no way I would ever walk out on my wife and kids. So I didn't want the character to do that. So he was saying he was going to change the movie and change the end. The public said, heck no, you better not change it. We like it the way it is. So he ended up not changing it. But he did have that same feeling. But I was going to say the parallel is, although kind of getting back to how I feel compelled to be involved in this field, and I know you do as well, there are certainly people like ourselves who are so obsessed with our interests that we do jeopardize our relationships by getting involved with this stuff. I know that our mutual friend Ben Hansen, I know he gets in trouble for the long conversations that you and he have about UFOs. And I get in trouble as well. So, I mean, that seems to be a thing.
I've discovered as the years have passed that I'm a little more guarded about giving out my own personal opinion on things like UFOs, anything dealing with the paranormal subjects that you and I have both dealt with over the years. You have to be kind of careful because you don't want to put people off if they tend not to believe in something, and that it could possibly disrupt their belief system on some level. And yet you want to give them information as well to help them come to a place where they can make up their own minds. My attitude has always been, with all the things that I've done and the stories that I've written, I've always just tried to present stories and cases and people's experiences and basically say to the audience, look, here's a lot of facts, here's a lot of information. I'm not telling you that I necessarily believe this, but I want to give you enough stuff that you can go out on your own and search for any kind of answer that will work for you, that will help you in your life. And that just seems to be the better way for me to do it. Because I have many people say to me, well, what do you think of this? And, you know, are we being visited? And why don't they land on the White House lawn? And no, they can't possibly be here because they can't get here from another planet or another solar system. I hate these kinds of questions. I really do.
But what really motivates you in this to keep, even with, you know, like you said, those people, the way they act and the way they react to comments, to motivate you to keep, you know, working in, you know, on UFOs? It's not like it's something that makes a lot of money or gets a lot of fame or is necessarily helpful to your career. Okay. So what is it that motivates you?
From the very beginning, which for me, in my adult life, this all started in 1973 for me. When I was
born? That's the year I was born.
We're really dating ourselves now, huh? Well, then the year you were born, Alejandro, was the year of one of the big UFO flaps, as they called in the United States. And for some reason, it was on the news because that's how I heard about it. And it caught my attention. And I mean, from two fishermen in Pascagoula, Mississippi, who claimed that they were fishing and taken on board some kind of a craft by beings, all the way to Ohio, where a four-man helicopter crew encountered a UFO that they almost collided with. To cases like that, going from the ridiculous and crazy to the totally credible, that somehow just caught my attention. And I just wanted to know more about this. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading some books, because there have always been books. The literature on UFOs has never died. Mm-hmm. Whether it's you know, books or magazines or newsletters, the thing is, you know, if you're just starting off in this business, you got to be really careful, because you don't know what to believe or who to believe. Mm-hmm. And I remember back when I started reading about this stuff, I knew that there were people that were considered charlatans and hoaxers and snake oil salesmen, just to get people to buy their books, buy their T-shirts, and you know, come to their weekend retreats and pay money and watch those strange lights in the sky. So there's always been that. There still is. But because of the choices that I made of the things that I thought I would like to do or see, and because I was fortunate enough to meet a variety of individuals who could help me take those steps to be credible, I've been really fortunate that I believe that I'm not going to say I know the truth about UFOs, because I don't really think anybody does. I've come to believe that. But I've learned so much from so many people who I consider really credible that keeps motivating me. There's something definitely out there, and I may not know the answers in my lifetime, but there's enough of it out there that why should I give it up? It's totally fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to the movie. So the movie, for people who don't know, and then we'll get it, because you're kind of getting into it, you know, some of these relations that you have, that and they're related to the movie and related to some really important stuff regarding this field. But just spoilers, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, if you're old like Lee and I, you know, you've probably seen it many times. If you're really young, at least relatively, you might not have seen it at all, so you got to go see it. But so this guy has a sighting. A bunch of people have a sighting. There's a flap, kind of a UFO flap. The government makes fun of it, but some people, including the main character, is compelled to find out more. And for some reason, he's got this image of the mountain in his brain. And like you said, he starts to make it out of mashed potatoes, and then a bunch of crazy stuff happens. His family leaves him. Meanwhile, a little kid's abducted, which is a great part to it. The government, meanwhile, even though they're saying there's nothing to it, are actually doing a lot of stuff in the background. This French guy, modeled after Jacques Vallée, is in charge of, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And they kind of figure out that the aliens want to meet them by Devil's Tower. So they pretend like there's this catastrophe of like anthrax that was released or something. So people all have to leave. The big UFO comes down, and the Richard Dreyfuss character and the mother of the kid who is abducted are able to sneak in and observe all of this. A lot of people come back once the craft lands, including the child. And Richard Dreyfuss decides, with others, to go off onto the spaceship. And with essentially is the gist of the story. But, you know, one of the consultants is J. Allen Hynek, for the he was listed as the advisor, who, of course, was the Air Force consultant. He was a well-known person. And he was a scientist, and maybe you could talk more about J. Allen Hynek. And you knew him. And when did you meet him?
I met him in 1975. When I started working on a UFO documentary, an audio documentary vinyl recording for CBS. And I had put a list of people who I had read about and heard about. I mean, even when I was a kid, whenever there was any kind of like UFO news on TV, you know, back in the days when we only had a black and white TV at home, if there was anything about strange things in the sky, the Air Force would always bring in this guy, Dr. Hynek, with the beard and his pipe, and he would always explain it away as either swamp gas or misidentification of the planet Venus or weather inversions. And I remember thinking, oh, I don't know what those words mean, weather inversions, but the guy sounds like he's authority, so maybe I should believe him. And I never could have imagined, Alejandro, that years later I would have the kind of relationship with him where he was like, to me, he became the grandfather that I never knew. I never knew either of my grandparents, but Alan Hynek kind of took me under his wing like that. And it was amazing to get to know this man, because you could tell that he was happy to have left the Air Force after 22 years of going around the country and explaining UFOs and debunking things. And he had no problem saying, hey, the Air Force doesn't know how to do science. They're explaining things away that they shouldn't be explaining. There are too many cases that are just left as unknowns, and they're just trying to just brush it all under the carpet. And he hated that, hated that totally, until he finally walked away from the Air Force and said, I'm out of here. But after 22 years, he was one of the first people that I interviewed for my record album, because I wanted to get his take on the things that he had learned, the things that he was told to do, his current opinion on what UFOs or what some UFOs might turn out to be or might point us in a different direction for science. It was amazing to get to know him. And when I told him that I was considering trying to bring the subject and do a presentation about it at the United Nations, he jumped all over that. He sent me this letter that I still have, and he said, please, I want to be there at the UN with you. I want to talk to the nations of the world just to let them know what I think about all this. It was amazing to me to know him. And, you know, I'll watch Close Encounters almost as many times as you have, just to see him at the end of the movie.
Yeah, so he is in the end. Of course, yeah. I'm going to be talking about Spielberg, and I'll be showing that clip this weekend at the event. But if people go see the movie that's out right now for the anniversary, it's towards the end, and right when, you know, the spaceship lands and there's these pilots coming out who are missing from, like, World War II. And then you see this scientist coming from the back in a blue jacket, and he kind of pushes himself through the crowd and then puts his pipe in his mouth and strokes his beard there. That's him. And that was common, right? He had pretty much the same facial hair and the pipe and everything, right?
Yeah. It was amazing. And I can still remember what it was like listening on the news to how in 1966, when he was sent by the Air Force to Michigan to explain some of the UFOs there, and he said that it might have been caused by swamp gas. And almost immediately after that, Michigan Congressman Gerald R. Ford came out with these statements saying, no, I don't agree with Dr. Hynek that, you know, you can't come to my state and start calling people liars, and so I'm going to demand a congressional investigation. And he got it. It was such an interesting time of watching the power play between these people. And then, you know, then people will say, well, after Gerald Ford became president, why did he suddenly shut up about UFOs? Aha, gee, there's an interesting possibility. Why did he?
What happened in Congress? Explain that, because I don't think people, a lot of people know about that.
They tried to get as many eyewitnesses as possible. For my album, I interviewed the man who was the chair of the Congressional Committee, Congressman J. Edward Rausch. And he said, basically, people want to know about UFOs. When you tell someone, I don't know what it is, and I want to know what it is, you owe it to your constituents to do whatever you can to come up with an answer. And I don't remember how long the congressional hearings lasted, but basically, as was with the case of Project Blue Book itself, the Air Force investigation, I believe the congressional hearings ended with basically some people saying, no, we don't think there's anything to it that could merit any further scientific research on it. And then it quickly went away, just like that.
Sort of like the result of the UN initiative that you were a part of.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you're up against the big boys, and in my case, it was the big boys were the United States of America, my own country, and the then Soviet Union. They didn't want.
Well, there's one more big boy though, because America, we learned, didn't care too much, but there was one group in particular, and we have a mutual friend who eventually worked for this group. You found out, and they even had your name, worked very hard to shut down your whole initiative, right? Remember the United Kingdom.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that was at the time, in 1978, when I was working behind the scenes to gather information, documents, pictures, eyewitnesses, speakers, to bring them to the UN to do a real presentation. I didn't know at the time that the UK was trying to get my presentation shut down before it even ever happened. It took 30 years before I found out about this. And at the time, I was working as a writer for the Huffington Post. And as you know, periodically, the UK was releasing previously classified documents from their own archives, from the Ministry of Defense, and they used to release these in batches. I wrote about it. You wrote about it. You know, all of us who are interested were getting these documents released, and I remember one of the people at. A mutual friend of yours and mine, Nick Pope, used to run the UK's UFO office for 3 years in the 1990s. So all UFO reports that kind of came to the Ministry of Defense apparently went through Nick's hands. And he had to read them and decide. And he was under orders to do whatever he could to put down these stories, to ridicule them, to make them go away. Let's not get the public interested in this stuff. And
all right.
So
I'm going to stop you right there, and this will be a good cliffhanger because we have to go to break. So, of course, we do air this on KGRA, and we take some commercial breaks. So for those of you listening to KGRA, you know, listen to the commercials, go patronize those people because it helps keep KGRA on the air. And for you podcasters, you'll just hear a slight musical break, and we'll be right back with Lee Spiegel. Thank you. Hi, we are back, and you are listening to Open Mind UFO Radio, and my guest is journalist Dr. Lee Spiegel. Sorry, I almost forgot to call you doctor. Some people
Come on.
People are going to get the wrong impression, and then everybody's going to be calling you Dr. Lee Spiegel. It'll be my fault. But you were just talking about our friend, Nick Pope, and how him and his buddies were trying to thwart your efforts.
I'll come back to that point because he later in later years apologized to me about this. But I was working on the UK had just released some new documents to the public, and so I started looking at them, and I realized that there were documents from the late 1970s. Now, my United Nations presentation was in 1978. And I started looking at these documents, and one by one by one, I'm reading these things that had just been released by Great Britain, and it seemed very clear that in 1977, 78, there was a strong attempt by the UK to stop my UFO event at the UN in New York in 1978. I mean, there were actual documents and quotes, and the documents said things like, we don't think that it would be a good idea for the United Nations to take on the subject of UFOs because it wouldn't be good for the UN's reputation to be dealing with something like this. And I went, wait a minute, what? So I took some of these documents to my editor at Huffington Post, and I said, look at these documents. They're talking about 30 years ago trying to stop my presentation at the United Nations. Now this story has become personal to me. Can I write this story in the first person and not in the third person? And my editor said, yeah, go do it. And so I just completely reorganized my thoughts and turned it into like my story countering the UN story, and I found all these quotes, and I thought to myself, I should call Nick Pope, and I should ask him what he knows about this. And so I called Nick, and as soon as he got on the phone with me, he said, oh, I know why you're calling me. I said, oh, you do, do you? He said, look, let me just tell you that when you did your United Nations presentation in 1978, I was only 13 years old, so you can't blame me. and he will always confirm that story. He said, look, for what it's worth, I will now offer you a sincere, unofficial apology on behalf of my country for what we did to you or what we tried to do to you in 1978. I mean, what a story. I couldn't believe it that it took 30 years for this to come to my attention. And, and what did they mean that it wouldn't be good for the UN's reputation? What's the problem, everybody? Why wouldn't it be good?
Those files were interesting, the efforts that they were going to squash the whole thing. But, you know, during that period of time, of course, I think Close Encounters came out in 77. Right. And because of this, you actually got to meet Spielberg. So maybe I think you've told this story on the podcast before. For a lot of this, Lee has gone at length about the whole UN thing with on the podcast. But let's revisit that because I want to follow up with some newer information about this. But you got invited to because of the UN event, right? To go visit Spielberg with some of the Close Encounters people, essentially.
While Spielberg was working on the movie, I guess it was probably near the end of production and they were getting ready to release the movie in 1977. It was the big holiday movie for that year. I had already started talking to Dr. J. Allen Hynek about my idea to do something at the United Nations. And he was very excited about that. So apparently, behind the scenes, a little even behind my back, but I didn't mind that, because Hynek had a relationship with Spielberg because of the connection with the movie, apparently Hynek told Spielberg that that he, Hynek, was going to be part of this United Nations event coming up in 1978. And I guess he must have told Spielberg or someone in the Columbia Pictures publicity department. And literally, I was at home in New York, and I got a call from Columbia Pictures asking if I would be available to come out to California and to meet with Steven Spielberg, Dr. Hynek, and Dr. Vallee. And I said, yeah, I think so, but what are we meeting about? And they said, well, we understand you're getting ready to do a United Nations presentation on UFOs, and Steven would like to sit with you guys and see if there's anything that he or the studio can do to support that or to help you with that. And I said, yeah, of course I'm going to be there. In fact, by the end of this conversation, my bags will be packed. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to come to California. And that's exactly what happened. And that was the first time that I actually met Jacques Vallee, because he came into Los Angeles, and he was already living in the San Francisco area. Alan Hynek was flown in from Illinois, and I came in from New York, and we all three of us were brought to the studio, brought into Steven's office, and there we were sitting around talking about UFOs, and I just wanted to beg somebody there to pinch me, because it didn't seem real to me, but I didn't want to come off as being totally nerdy like that, so I kept it to myself.
He was probably a kid back then, right? You too, though.
Yeah, well, that was 19 early 78. So I was just under 30 years old, and Stephen and I are about the same age. Mm-hmm. And literally, he was most well known for, I believe, three things at that point. A made-for-TV movie with Dennis, oh, what's his name? He used to
Hopper?
Be on Gunsmoke. No, Dennis. He played the the deputy. Oh, he played McLeod. Dennis.
Before my time. That's okay, okay, Dennis.
Okay. Anyway, he played a regular driver who was followed by this menacing
the
truck
duel.
Driver. The duel, exactly, yeah. Dennis Weaver was his name.
Yeah,
and so I think that was one of the first things that Stephen did, in addition to a Night Gallery episode that Stephen did, and then came Jaws, and then came Close Encounters.
Mm-hmm.
So his name was coming, certainly, up in the ranks of Hollywood, and so I certainly knew who he was. I was already a fan of his, and so it was great to talk to him for the period of time that we were there. And he eventually had the studio provide me with any kinds of visual materials that I needed, whether it was pictures or posters or diagrams or drawings that we could use at the United Nations that he had used in production for the movie. And they sent us stuff that I did use at the United Nations.
And you have, like, a unique poster. Is that how you got that, this poster that you have?
Yeah, I do. It was during that time, it was still when the movie was about to be released, that I became friendly with one of the people at Columbia Studios in New York. And they asked me if I wanted a couple of posters that they had printed up that originally were going to be used as a publicity for the movie. And it basically was like a dark night, a lonely road, and traveling above the road was like one of the UFOs from the movie. And the only words above the UFO in the sky were the words, "We are not alone." And I guess for some reason, the studio thought that wasn't catchy enough. And so they made a similar poster, but they added more text to it, like, "We are not alone. A close encounter of the first kind is blah, blah, blah. Close encounter of the second kind, blah, blah, blah. Close encounter of the third kind." So they filled the poster up with more text and more words. And I took a few of the posters just because they offered them to me. And I've got one hanging in my bedroom now at home. I'm very proud of it. It's not going to be offered on eBay anytime soon.
I like your version actually better. It's cool because it's simple. And,
yeah.
And I think you would agree. The saying "we are not alone" is
yeah.
powerful.
Yeah, and then it said, "We are not alone." Then the UFO, the road, and at the very bottom, simply close encounters of the third kind.
And you believe that, right? And I think you believe we are not alone.
Oh, of course. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. I mean, I really don't. There really is, I believe, too much evidence. And the hardcore skeptics and the debunkers will say, no, there's no evidence. It's all anecdotal. It's all hearsay. It's all people making stuff up. But you know what? It's not. It's much more than that. When you talk to people who have had encounters with something that is totally extraordinary, and I'm not talking about something that landed in someone's backyard and picked up a few soil samples and went back up into the air. Where that might have happened, I was much more compelled in 1973 at your birth, Alejandro, first of all. And in October of 73, the story of the Army helicopter that almost collided with the UFO, it grabbed me by the throat so hard that, and it was such an amazing close encounter that, and witnesses on the ground saw it happen as well. When the helicopter landed, the Army let the crew go ahead and tell their story. And I first saw the commander of the helicopter, Larry Coyne, on the old Dick Cavett show. And he told his story, and I went, wait a minute. Really? This can't be true. But it was. And it was just something that the Army couldn't explain away. I don't know how debunkers could have thought that it was the crescent moon or the planet Venus. This thing that came at the helicopter like a missile locked onto the aircraft. And then it stopped. Instead of hitting the helicopter, it hovered directly above the copter, and it shone a green light inside the cockpit of the helicopter. All four crew members saw this thing, and because of the reflection of the light, they could all see that it was a cigar shape. It had no forward wings, no back wings, no tail. Just a dark cigar shaped. And I, as they sat there, all of a sudden, the helicopter started rising up very quickly, as if a tractor beam had locked onto it by the cigar shaped thing that was above them. It lifted up their helicopter several thousand feet in the air in a matter of seconds. Then there was a bump and a jolt, and they were released, and the UFO took off, and that's when the helicopter went and landed. And I wanted the captain of the helicopter, Larry Coyne, on the UFO documentary record that I produced in 1975, but I also wanted him as one of my speakers at the United Nations in 1978. And I asked him if he would come to the UN and tell his story. And he said, I'd love to, but you're going to have to get permission from my commanding officer back in Ohio. And I said, okay, give me the guy's number. And I called Captain Coyne's commanding officer, explained who I was and how I wanted Captain Coyne to come to the United Nations. And to my huge surprise, the officer said to me, okay, we will allow Captain Coyne to join you and to speak at the United Nations, but on one condition. And I said, name it. He cannot appear there in uniform. He must wear civilian clothes. He can appear as a civilian. And I said, so you're saying if I buy him a suit, he's okay to come to the UN? He said, yep, that's all we ask. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So it was amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And so stuff like that is seeing, being there, listening to his testimony again, watching how you could literally hear a pin drop at the UN when he was giving his testimony, that says to me, excuse me, but we're not alone. Mm-hmm. I don't care where these things come from. I don't care who's piloting them. I don't care. All I know is that there's something extraordinary going on here, and I'd like to know more about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to change the topic. I'd touch on something else before we're done here, and that is I have been told by Don Schmidt, who worked with Hynek, early on, what Hynek's reaction was to the Close Encounter movie. Did he ever share his opinions with you?
He never really liked how some of the things were portrayed. I think because of all the years that Alan spent actually getting down and deep in the soil and going to places like Socorro, New Mexico, and really investigating places where UFOs may have landed and left traces behind, and how people describe certain things that happened, I think that he felt that Spielberg may have taken more liberties with the movie than he would have enjoyed. I believe that Jacques Vallée feels the same way. There's a definite feeling about how you give the public what Hollywood wants you to give them, or you give the public what you think the public wants to see. I've always thought, and I've always said this, that you don't have to over embellish things about UFOs. The subject itself is already sensational, so you don't have to create scenarios within a movie.
Although
to make
this
it seem
is a movie, so it's got to be dramatized. It's hard to, you can't go over every case, so I think they're trying to encapsulate the whole idea and kind of some of the things people report, which I think they did good, although I can see their points. And you did touch on this a bit, but yeah, you said that Vallée had actually last week or something, you had talked about this, and he shared the same. He was a bit disappointed as well, huh?
Well, I think that both Vallée and Hynek felt that you don't have to over embellish something. Just keep it the way it is. Keep it truthful. If anything, make a documentary. But it's Hollywood, and Hollywood wants to make a lot of money. I get that. I'm okay with that. But I mean, listen, I love the movie as much as you did. You know, there's so much about it. I love the characters. I love the special effects. You and I have become very friendly with the king of the special effects of that movie, Douglas Trumbull. I mean,
what's
funny
about
what he did.
Doug Trumbull too is that he's a big UFO guy, and of course he did the special effects for Close Encounters. But I interviewed him. He said he didn't even know that Hynek was a consultant. He didn't know he could have spoken to Hynek. He came up with all the stuff by himself with no input from Hynek at all, and he regrets it because he would have loved to have talked with him. So, funny thing. But I guess, you know, and I think you and I would agree. I mean, I can see their point of view. I was shocked when I heard that Hynek didn't really like the movie. Not as surprised because of Hynek's perspective when you told me Vallée felt similar, but I can see their perspective, because if it was us, if it was you and I, a case that we had done, like, for instance, if they decided to do a movie about your whole UN experience, they would dramatize it. You know, you would definitely have a love interest. who knows? It may be Stanton Friedman's character. They would turn into a woman who would then fall in love with you, and you guys would run off into the night or something. But
I could see.
So I can see their perspective, but then again, yeah, it was a great movie, and it's something that certainly inspired me. And we've only got like a minute left, but
okay. Well, you know, I'm very grateful to know you, and to know that you are one of those people who I admire, because you don't screw around with having to make stuff up for the stories that you write. That's why. That's why I've always enjoyed stealing from you, because you're so credible with the things that you do. So thank you for that.
Well, ditto. So, yeah, we are pretty much out of time, but you are still active in the UFO field, although you're not working for Huffington Post anymore. And I guess, is UFO still on your agenda, at least for your near future?
It is. I am currently working on what I hope is going to be a very telling, interesting UFO documentary with the great filmmaker James Fox, who has already created what I believe are two of the best UFO films ever. Two films called Out of the Blue and I Know What I Saw. And so I'm now working on his third UFO documentary. I'm going to be writing the script for this, and I couldn't be happier doing this with him.
Well, good luck. I agree. I think a lot of people would agree. He's got the best, some of the best documentaries out there on the topic.
Yeah.
So I know others are really excited for his new project, and now doubly so now knowing that you're working on it.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Alejandro. Thank
you. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon. In fact, I think you're the guest who's been on the show the most.
That's because I'm an MD. I have the doctor.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. We'll talk to you later, Dr. Spiegel.
Thank you, Dr. Rojas.
Thank you so much to Lee Spiegel for joining us once again on Open Minds UFO Radio. It's always fun to have him on. Well, he's just so knowledgeable. He's been involved with so many things over the years, and especially right now, I mean, with it comes to Close Encounters, you know, just what was going on during that time with the UN, the stuff that he was involved with, Spielberg's genuine interest in UFOs. It's all really exciting. And of course, then Lee having worked with Hynek and Vallée, and even recently gotten to talk with Vallée about Close Encounters. So really, really exciting stuff. Now, some of these stories, such as Hynek sending Lee to go investigate this UFO with police and everything, and where he saw this large triangular UFO, the whole UN thing and what happened there. We've got podcasts with Lee where we go over all of that. So go look into our archives and pull out those podcasts. You will not be disappointed if you are not aware of those situations and you want to know more. So go check those out. Otherwise, also, you know, when it comes to Spielberg and UFOs, like I was talking about, I have a big chunk in my talk about the strange alien cases. So you guys can go look at that. Go to UFOCongress.com and you'll be able to find our video on demand section there, and you'll be able to watch those. You can also find that at the openminds.tv website. So you can see some of that. Otherwise, you're just going to have to come to Wyoming and hear more. I've got a lot of really great stuff on Spielberg and some of his UFO interests. So I'm super, super excited about it. Another thing that I am really, really, really excited about is the UFO Congress. So we are posting speakers practically every week. We're posting new speakers as we get everything confirmed and arranged and so and all their information back. So go to UFOCongress.com to check out some of the speakers we're going to have this year. We're going to have some really cool speakers, stuff that you haven't seen before that's going to be fresh and new to this field. That's what's fun about the Congress, is we like to bring information to the fore that otherwise people would not know about, that I think you all are going to be really excited about. But go to UFOCongress.com to keep up to speed on that. Otherwise, all the news that you heard Martin and I talking about at the beginning of the show, and you can find at openminds.tv. So be sure to go there, check out our news stories, and then also check out, you know, the daily headlines like we talk about often. You'll see those on the front page, but also if you go to the articles drop-down menu, you can go to daily UFO headlines or look at UFO sightings, UFO videos, all the different stories that we've written about. I want to remind you, too, you can find out about the UFO rendezvous in Wyoming that we've been talking about at the openminds.tv page on the events tab. And then also you can, of course, go to their website, which is simply devilstowerufo-rendezvous.com. The hardest part about it is spelling rendezvous. Otherwise, I want to thank Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. I want to thank KGRA, and thank you for the listeners on KGRA listening right now. And then I also want to, of course, thank you, the listeners. Adios, muchachos.